Ms. Pollock, do you want to let us know where we left off last night?
Madam Chair, members, Nora Pollock, Senate Counsel. Ms. Hagler and I will be starting with Senate Article 5, also House Article 5, the Sales and Use Tax article, which starts on page 37 of the side-by-side.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members, Senate Section 1 pertains to a sales tax exemption for admissions to county fairs. And this is a provision that goes along with Section 8 of the article that requires a county agricultural society to use the sales tax savings from the sales tax exemption to maintain, improve, and expand buildings and facilities located at fairgrounds.
Madam Chair and members, Alex Hagler with House Research. The House does not have a comparable provision to the provision that Ms. Pollock just explained. Sections 1 through 5 and 7 through 9 of the House bill create some conforming definitions and provisions relating to low-potency edible products, just clarifying that they are subject to state sales tax and clarifying that the typical exemptions that apply to government nonprofits and nursing homes don't apply to these products. Section 6 of the House bill expands the exemptions for certain baby products to include a wider variety of items, and this is the same as Senate Section 2.
Section 3 provides a sales tax exemption for secure firearm storage units, and it also includes some language prohibiting sellers of those units from collecting or transmitting information about purchasers of secure firearm storage units. Moving on to the bottom of page 38, Senate Section 4 provides a sales tax exemption for fiber and conduit used in broadband and internet access. Section 5 of the Senate includes an exemption for amenities included with the privilege of admission when sold by the seller of the privilege of admission. Moving down to the bottom of page 39, Senate Section 6 provides a sales tax exemption for blood centers. Senate Section 7 on page 40 expands the exemption for nonprofit snowmobile clubs. There are minor language differences here. The Senate provision would be ongoing. And I don't know if Ms. Hagler has any comments on the House provision.
Madam Chair, the Section 11 of the House bill is similar, and this expansion of the expansion of the exemption would sunset after 4 years.
Madam Chair, Section 8 of the Senate bill is in reference to the Section 1 I mentioned earlier, modifying the County Agricultural Society sales tax exemption. Section 9 provides an exemption for properties destroyed by fire in Mazeppa back in 2018. This is an exemption in current law, and this provision simply extends the date of that the purchase window date for that exemption. Madam Chair, moving on to the rest of the article, there are a number of sales tax exemptions for local government facilities, and Ms. Hagler and I will try to go through those in as broad detail as possible. There are some other more specific exemptions kind of sprinkled through here, which we'll try to touch on as well. Section 9 exempts construction materials used for the North Metro Regional Training Facility. And there's no comparable provision in the House. It's covered by a broader exemption later in the House article.
Madam Chair, Section 12 of the House bill creates a new temporary exemption for fees related to natural gas during a specified time period in February 2021. This provision is similar to Section 11 of the Senate's language, just with minor wording differences. Section 13 provides a temporary sales tax holiday for certain school supply products, and that will occur this August between the 15th and 21st. The Senate does not have a comparable provision for that. House Section 14, as Ms. Pollock stated, is the broad exemption for construction materials for local governments and nonprofits. And the Senate does not have a comparable provision. The remainder of the House, sections 15 through 19, provide construction exemptions to various cities, school districts, and the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. The provisions are adjusted to account for the broad exemption that I just described and the side-by-side summary notes if these sections are the same as the Senate or if they're covered by the broad exemption from the Senate language. And I guess, Madam Chair, if you want us to go through each project and city, we can otherwise. Okay. I think that might be it.
Madam Chair, that is it. There are a number of sales tax exemptions for local governments. So if you are not looking for further guidance, I think further detail on those provisions, I think that concludes our Article 4. Article 5.
I would ask before we move on if there were any questions, since we're not doing it in detail, if there are any questions from members on that article. Seeing none, please proceed.
Madam Chair and members, Jared Swanson with House Research. We'll move on to Article 6, which in both the House and Senate bills are the articles related to minerals taxation. We'll keep this overview at a very high level because effectively these articles are the same. But if members have any questions on particular sections, we'd be happy to give more detail. So these articles would convert the net proceeds tax on non-ferrous mining to a gross proceeds tax. They would expand the definition of the taconite assistance area to include certain areas where the mining of non-ferrous materials is occurring. These sections would also change the distribution of the gross proceeds tax. And the articles contain a number of transfers from certain production tax distribution accounts. One of these transfers would be distributed to a variety of projects and organizations on the Iron Range.
Madam Chair, members, as Mr. Swanton indicated, on the Senate side, Article 6 is identical to House Article 6, the only exception being in Section 4 of Senate Article 6 and Section 11. There are some technical and formatting differences, inconsequential in nature, but otherwise the language of both the House and Senate minerals articles are identical. And that concludes that article, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Chair Ress and members, I'm Sean Williams from House Research. I'm going to briefly discuss Article 7, which pertains to the renter's credit. This is in the House bill only. I'm not going to go section by section because many of the changes in this article are technical in nature. I would note that sort of at a high level, the bill sort of converts the existing renter's credit program into a refundable income tax credit. The credit is sort of provided at the same level as provided under current law, so there's no changes to the structure or amounts of the credit. You know, one policy change I might reference in this article that is sort of new is in Section 36 of the House language, and that appropriates $3.94 million in fiscal 24 and $3.94 million in fiscal 25. For tax credit outreach grants. So these would go in part to taxpayer assistance sites or VITA sites, but also other groups that serve communities that have low rates of participation in the renter's credit and other refundable credits. There's also a section that sort of relates to both the House Working Family and Child Credit Proposal and the renter's credit proposal, requiring the Department of Revenue to set up a simplified form so people who don't have a filing requirement can file and claim those credits. And that concludes Article 7.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. I'm Justin Cope. I'm a legislative analyst with the House Research Department. Together with Mr. Silvia, we'll be walking through the TIF articles in the bills. Article 8 on the House side, sections 1 through 5 and 7 through 13, is the Office of the State Auditor's TIF bill, which deals with the treatment of administrative expenses, payments made to the county auditor by TIF districts, and pooling restrictions. This is the same as Senate Article 8 in its entirety, with the exception that Section 1 of Article 8 in the House side and Section 1 of Article 8, there's one similarity where in a provision dealing with the definition of administrative expenses on a list of purchases which do not count as administrative, the House says that payment of land and buildings does not count as an administrative expense, and in the Senate side it says payment of purchase of land or buildings does not count as an administrative expense. On the House side, there is on Article 6 of Article 8, there is a modification of the general law governing tax increment financing so that income limitations applying to housing districts would not apply outside the metropolitan counties except in cities with populations over 50,000. There is no comparable provision in the Senate bill.
Madam Chair, members, moving to page 56 of the side-by-side, Senate Article 7, Section 1 is a general law change relating to the definition of small city for purposes of economic development districts. There's no comparable provision in the House except that the House would designate three particular cities as small cities rather than make the general law change. And also the Senate Section 2 proposal includes modifications to a TIF district for the city of Hopkins that the House has no comparable provision for.
Section 14 of Article 8 of the House bill extends a Bloomington tax increment financing district 5-year and 6-year rule and would also extend the duration of the district for currently undeveloped parcels.
Madam Chair, members, the Senate section also includes a modification to the Bloomington TIF authority. It includes the 5- and 6-year extension, but it does not include a parcel by parcel duration extension. The Senate instead extends the entire duration of the district. Moving on to Senate Article 7, Sections 4 and 5, both of these sections are identical in the House and Senate, and they relate to a TIF district in the city of St. Paul. These sections extend the duration of the district and also expand the authorized expenditure of revenues collected from that district. Senate Article 7, Section 6, which is identical to House Article 8, Section 17, relates to a TIF district in the city of Savage. Both sections extend the 5-year rule and the period by which the geographical area of the district can be enlarged.
House Article 8, Section 18 is special legislation for the city of Chatfield, which would allow the city of Chatfield or its Economic Development Authority to establish an economic development district for the construction of a multi-level hotel with a 15,000-foot footprint. And the Senate Article 7, Section 9 is the same except for some inconsequential formatting districts. House Article 8, Section 19 and 20 allow Duluth to establish a redevelopment districts in a specified area with exempting those districts from blight finding and blight correction requirements and allowing increment to be used on the development of seawalls and pier facings.
Madam Chair, the Senate takes a slightly different approach in Article 7, Section 7 and 8. On the Senate side, the Senate amends special legislation enacted in 2019 to allow the city to establish one additional district within that defined area and also to extend the duration of the entire district by 5 years. Again, those districts established pursuant to that 2019 special law. In Senate Article 7, Section 8, there is a provision that would extend the 5-year rule for the city of Ramsey, and there is no comparable provision for that in the House bill.
House, Article 8, Section 21, establishes special legislation for the City of Duluth, which would allow the city or its economic development authority to establish multiple redevelopment districts in a specified area that would include multiple exemptions from general TIF law, including exempting it from blight finding and blight correction requirements, exempting the districts from prohibitions on authorities acquiring more than 25% of the acreage in a project without contracts that would give the authority recourse if the parcels aren't developed, and a broad exemption from pooling limitations, including provisions that that the six-year rule would not apply to any of these districts until December 31st, 2051.
Madam Chair, Senate Article 7, Section 10 relates to the same City of Duluth authorization. However, the Senate would only exempt the district from the so-called blight test and also the statutory requirement that 90% of the increment collected be used to correct blight correction. None of the other exemptions that Mr. Cope indicated are carried in the Senate bill. Article 7, Section 11 relates to the City of Fridley, and the language is nearly identical to that carried in House Article 8, Section 22. This would allow the City of Fridley to transfer increment from a particular district to the city's HRA. The only differences in language is that a legislative report is due in 2025 and 27 on the Senate side. It's due 1 year earlier on the House side, and also the period by which the authority to transfer increment exists. The Senate would provide one additional year until 2027 to make that transfer. And Madam Chair, members, we discussed in the next two sections earlier in our presentation. Again, the Senate makes a general law change to the definition of small city, whereas the House designates three particular cities as a small city for purposes of that type of district.
Section 25 of Article 8 of the House bill allows Plymouth to establish multiple redevelopment districts and specified parcels pursuant to special rules that would exempt the districts from blight finding and blight correction requirements, would include extensions of the 5 and 6 year rules, and would allow up to 75% of the increment from those districts to be expended on improvements to what was formerly County Road 47.
And Madam Chair, the Senate includes this particular authorization, however, limits the number of districts that can be established to not more than two, and also does not authorize the 5 and 6 year rule extensions that are carried in the House. Senate Article 7, Section 13 is identical to House Article 8, Section 26, but for some minor technical changes. These sections relate to the City of Shakopee and would authorize the city to establish multiple TIF districts within a defined kind of gravel pit area.
House Article 8, Section 27 was previously covered. As Mr. Sylvia mentioned, this would give special, this would designate the City of Spicer to be a small city for the purposes of tax increment financing, and that provision is encompassed with general law changes made in the Senate bill. House Article 8, Section 28 enacts special legislation for the City of West St. Paul, allowing the city to establish multiple redevelopment districts and specified parcels, and would exempt those findings from blight finding requirements, and would deem expenditures on the property identified in the legislation as meeting the requirements that 90% of increment from a redevelopment district be spent on blight correction.
Madam Chair, Senate Article 7, Section 14 is nearly identical to that of House Article 8, Section 28 concerning the City of West St. Paul. There's just a difference in kind of the wording and the treatment of that 90% requirement. The Senate provides that general law requirement does not apply to the district, rather than deeming certain expenditures as meeting that test. And lastly, Senate Article 7, Section 15 is identical to House Article 8, Section 29, except for some, again, sort of minor inconsequential technical differences. This relates to the City of Woodbury, and this section would authorize a duration extension and also flexibility concerning the type of projects that can be funded with increment generated from the district. And Madam Chair, that concludes the walkthrough of the city specific provisions. The Senate, because it separated the Office of the State Auditor changes into a separate article, you'll see that that is again repeated beginning on page 62, but those sections were already discussed earlier and they are identical as Mr. Cope indicated, except for that one and or change reflected in Senate Article 8, Section 1.
Madam Chair, I will just start with a few comments about the Senate local sales and use tax article. The House does not have a comparable article. Both the Senate and the House do have some local special tax provisions that we'll discuss in just a moment. Senate Article 9 pertains to local sales and use taxes. The first three sections provide some changes to the general statute governing enactment of local sales and use taxes and modifications to existing taxes. Following that, Madam Chair, starting at Section 4 through the end of the article, the Senate authorizes and authorizes modifications for, I believe, local sales taxes for 37 local jurisdictions. Madam Chair, unless you have questions, I won't go into any more detail there.
The only thing is, I wonder, Ms. Pollack, if you would just review the general requirements in statute that local governments that are seeking approval have to meet before they take a particular proposal to the people for a referendum.
Madam Chair, sure. Do you want me to discuss those in light of the changes made in the Senate article or just in general?
I think just that in general right now, the current law, so that everybody knows what the starting point
sure.
is.
Madam Chair and members, to enact or make a modification to a local sales tax, a local government must adopt a resolution indicating the specific projects for which tax revenues would be used, the amount of revenue expected to be needed to cover the costs of those projects plus associated bonding costs, and the duration of the time that the tax would be imposed to cover the costs of the specific projects. Local government must then submit its resolution along with some supporting documentation on the regional nature of the projects to the chairs and ranking members of the House and Senate Taxes Committees. The committees would then possibly take up those proposals for discussion. If a local sales tax is authorized by the legislature, it would then go to the voters at an election held not more than 2 years after first authorized. The election, of course, could only offer projects that had been approved by the legislature and not include any project that was not in the special law authorizing the local sales tax. And then the tax would be, if approved by the voters, the tax could be implemented upon notification by the local government to the Secretary of State of the voter approval.
Thank you. Sure. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering if you, in going over those requirements, if you can just talk about the kinds of projects that are included and the qualities of those projects that are in statute now, and let me know if there are any changes proposed in the legislation before us to
those requirements specifically about the type of projects that are funded by local option sales taxes. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative Gomez, there is a definition in current law of a capital project, and local sales taxes must meet that definition, or the authorizing law can not withstand that definition. I may need some help from Ms. Hengler here. There's a list of three things, and I'm going by memory. It's a building or associated infrastructure that would be for public use, trails or parks, and connecting means of connecting a trail or a park. And
I think the parks and the trails are separate.
Are they? Okay. So Ms. Hegler is reminding me that the parks and the trails are two separate things. So a building and associated infrastructure, a named park or recreation area, and trails. Madam Chair, Representative Gomez, in large part, the projects that are authorized in the Senate article do meet that definition. There are maybe a handful of proposals that would not meet that authorization or that definition. For example, street improvement projects, water and sewer projects, and funds for economic and housing development.
Madam Chair, moving on to House Article 9 is titled Local Taxes. However, these better match up with Senate Article 10, Local Special Taxes. Sections 1 and 2 provide an extension of Duluth's tourism tax. Section 1 extends the food and beverage portion, and then Section 2 makes a corresponding change to the lodging portion, allowing them to collect up to $54 million for additional capital improvements. And then lastly, on the House side, Section 3 provides modifications to Cook County's lodging tax, extending the duration from 15 years to 30 years. And that provision is the same in the Senate. Oh, and the Senate does not have a comparable Duluth tourism tax provision. Oh, and the Cook County provisions are the same in the House and the Senate.
Madam Chair, Senate Section 2 authorizes Lake of the Woods County to impose a lodging tax of up to 3%, but that authorization would not apply in a statutory or home rule town or city located in the county that imposes a lodging tax currently or in the city of Baudette. And then finally, Madam Chair, Senate Section 3 authorizes the city of Wayzata to impose a food and beverage tax of up to 1%. And that concludes the article, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, members, I'll be walking through Justin Cope, House Research, will be walking through the public finance articles with Mr. Sylvia. Article 10, Section 1 of the House Public Finance article allows public funds to be invested in time deposits that are insured by the National Association of Credit Unions. There is no comparable provision to that section in the House article. Article 10, Sections 2 through 7, and Senate Article 11, Sections 1 through 6 are the same. Those sections extend the period in which debt financing notes or certificates must be payable from 10 years to 20 years. House Article 10, Section 2, Senate Article 11, Section 1 makes those changes with respect to general obligation certificates of indebtedness or capital notes issued by a school district. House Article 10, Section 3, Senate Article 11, Section 2 makes that change with respect to certificates of indebtedness issued by a town. House Article 10, Section 4, Senate Article 11, Section 3 makes that change with respect to capital notes issued by counties to purchase capital equipment. House Article 10, Section 5, Senate Article 11, Section 4 makes that change for capital notes issued by Hennepin County. House Article 10, Section 6, Senate Article 11, Section 5 makes that change for capital notes issued by a home rule charter city. House Article 10, Section 7, Senate Article 11, Section 6 makes that change for certificates of indebtedness or capital notes issued by a statutory city. And House Article 10, Sections 8 through 11, and Senate Article 11, Sections 7 through 10 apply levy certification requirements to certain special taxing jurisdictions that had not previously certified a levy. House Article 10, Section 8 applies that requirement to housing and redevelopment authorities. That is the same as Senate Article 11, Section 7. House Article 10, Section 9 makes that change with respect to port authorities. That is the same as Senate Article 11, Section 8. House Article 10, Section 10 makes that change again with respect to port authorities, and that is the same as Senate Article 11, Section 9. House Article 10, Section 11 makes that change with respect to economic development authorities, and that is the same as Section Article 11, Section 10.
Madam Chair and members, Eric Sylvia with Senate Counsel. Senate Article 11, Sections 11 and 12 relate to Met Council. Section 11 authorized the Met Council to issue certain general obligation bonds over a two-year period, and Section 12 will prohibit the Met Council from using any proceeds from bonds issued under that Section 11 for light rail transit, including project development, land acquisition, or construction to establish or expand a light rail line. There are no comparable provisions in the House for Sections 11 or 12.
House Article 10, Section 12 removes the requirement that public facilities funded by tax-exempt bonds be publicly owned or be district heating and cooling facilities, and this change aligns Minnesota's treatment of tax-exempt bonds with federal tax rules for tax-exempt bonds. That is the same as Senate Article 11, Section 13. House Article 10, Section 13 strikes some language dealing with the treatment of public facility bonds, which again aligns this section of Minnesota law with federal treatment of tax-exempt bonds. That is the same as Senate Article 11, Section 14. House Article 10, Section 14 removes the requirement that 40-year term limits for tax-exempt bonds be used only for financing municipal waste and or water and wastewater treatment facilities that were financed or guaranteed by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and that is the same as Senate Article 11, Section 15.
Madam Chair, members, Senate Article 11, Section 16 relates to the City of St. Paul, and it provides an extension by 10 years and increases from 20 to 30 million the authority of the city to issue capital improvement bonds. This is the same as House Article 12, Section 29. That provision appears in the House's miscellaneous article. There are some just technical differences in the effective date, but they're inconsequential, as both would require city approval and filing requirements. And lastly, Madam Chair, Senate Article 11, Section 17 relates to the City of Virginia, and this would authorize the city to finance the construction of a public safety building with a loan from the United States Department of Ag, and would provide that any bonds issued relating to the project or repayment shall not be included in the computation of the city's limit on net debt. That specific proposal is carried in the House miscellaneous article, Article 12, Section 31. The only change is that the Senate would require city approval and the House provision would be effective without city approval. Madam Chair, that concludes a walkthrough of the public finance articles.
And Madam Chair, I've been informed by a colleague that I should note that Senate Article 11, Sections 11 and 12 have comparable provisions in the House Transportation Bill.
Do you want it here or there? Because it means I pay.
My guy. Madam Chair, Alex Hagler, House Research. Moving to Article 11, this is a House-only purpose statement article that pursuant to Section 3.192, this is the purpose statement article that provides purpose statements for tax expenditures included in the House bill. And it also includes purpose statements from previous House tax bills that were not enacted. And the Senate does not have a comparable article for this. That concludes Article 11. Madam Chair, I can move into the miscellaneous article, or Mr. Mung can move into the miscellaneous article. Oh, sorry. I skipped an article. Just really trying to get us in.
Madam Chair and members, Casey Mum, Senate Fiscal Analyst. On page 80 of the side-by-side is the Senate's Article 12, which is the stadium reserve changes. There's no comparable article in the House bill. Sections 1, 3, and 4 make conforming changes related to the repeal of the stadium reserve and the bond authorizations. Section 2 repeals a requirement that a portion of sales tax revenue that would otherwise be remitted to the city of Minneapolis is repealed. That retention is for the purpose of repaying advance payments made to the MSFA for improvements around the stadium. Section 5 appropriates money for to construct a perimeter around the stadium. Section 6 provides an appropriation that can be used to make up the difference between the current balance in the stadium reserve and the amount necessary to defease the bonds. And Section 7 contains the repealer of the stadium reserve and the statutes authorizing the issuance of bonds. This would have the effect of eliminating the debt service payment and the deposit into the stadium reserve. And this repealer is conditional upon the Commissioner of Management and Budget's election to defease the bonds.
Madam Chair, members, Bjorn Arneson with the Senate staff. This is the miscellaneous article, Senate Article 13 and House Article 12. Sections 1 and 2 on the Senate side modify some election programs. Section 1 establishes the local election expense reimbursement program. It creates that account, provides some program language, and beginning in fiscal 24, annually transfers $6 million from the general fund to that account to fund reimbursements. Section 2 modifies an existing grant program relating to expenditures for hardware, software, other infrastructure. Similarly, the program is funded with an annual $4 million transfer from the general fund to fund those grants.
Madam Chair, the House tax bill does not have a comparable provision, but there are similar provisions being carried in the House state government and elections bill.
Madam Chair, Section 3 on the Senate side establishes the amateur sports account in the special revenue fund and appropriates an amount in that account to the Amateur Sports Commission. Section 4 is very similar to a provision in House Article 16, Section 1, the DOR policy and tech miscellaneous article. The language is nearly identical, except for some slightly different language near the end of that section relating to information used by the commissioner to compute these refunds and payments under the agreements.
Madam Chair and members, House Article 12, Sections 1 and 2 both deal with the Tax Expenditure Review Commission. Section 1 provides some cleanup language relating to when the commission may complete its initial review of tax expenditures and that they can do so sooner than 3 years after its establishment. And then Section 2 clarifies the time period covered by the Tax Expenditure Review Commission's annual report, and the Senate does not have comparable provisions for these two sections. Section 3 establishes a taxpayer receipt and requires MMB to publish and annually update an interactive taxpayer receipt on its website. The Senate does not have a comparable provision for that. Section 4 relates to revenue recapture and prohibits private nonprofit hospitals that release a building from the county or city in which they are located from making revenue recapture claims. And this is also a House-only provision. Section 5 removes the $50 fee charged to a taxpayer for entering into or modifying a payment agreement. And this provision is the same as Senate Section 5, except with some minor technical differences. Section 6 relates to the filing of property tax petitions in tax court and allows the auditor to waive personal service for other employees and removes the requirement that additional copies be served on other county officials. And this is similar to Section 7, just with some minor language differences. Section 7, 8, and 9, I believe, refer to some provisions that were discussed by Mr. Sylvia yesterday that deal with the 10% minimum interest rate on delinquent property taxes and allowing county boards to establish rates lower than what is set at 10%. I can move down to Section 10, which provides a rate reduction to the combined net receipts tax, and the percentages are probably best shown on page 83 of the side-by-side. There is no comparable Senate provision for that. Section 11 of the House bill provides that if the stadium bonds are prepaid, that no Minneapolis sales tax revenue will be retained for the city's debt service support payments. And the Senate does not have a comparable provision, but does have the provisions that Mr. Arneson just discussed in Senate Section or Article 12. And then Section 12 dedicates 5% of the proceeds for the solid waste management tax to an account in the Environmental Fund for expenditure on county waste reduction and recycling programs. And this provision is similar to Senate Section 7. However, the Senate provision allocates the additional tax proceeds beginning in 2027. And then sections 13 through 16 of the House bill pertain to the electronic pull tab devices and require that the devices and games require the reveal of each row of symbols as separate and distinct actions, and the Senate does not have comparable provisions for those three. Do you want to do the rest? I'm going to have Mr. Cope close out the article.
Madam Chair, members, Justin Cope, House Research. House Article 12, Sections 17 through 26, and Senate Article 13, Sections 8 through 17, would enact a new chapter in Minnesota statutes to allow the establishment of tourism improvement districts. House Article 12, Section 17, and Senate Article 13, Section 8, establish the definitions of that new proposed chapter. These two sections are similar, except that there's a difference in the definition of business between the House and Senate versions of those provisions. House Article 12, Section 18, and Senate Article 13, Section 9, establishes provisions for the establishment of a tourism improvement district. House Article 12, Section 19, Senate Article 13, Article 13, Section 10 establishes service charge authority for tourism improvement districts. House Article 12, Section 20, Senate Article 13, Section 11 provide provisions for the modification of an ordinance establishing a tourism improvement district. House Article 12, Section 21, Senate Article 13, Section 12 provides rules for the collection of service charges and penalties for failure to pay those service charges. Those provisions are the same. House Article 12, Section 22, Senate Article 13, Section 13 are the same, providing the treatment of a tourism improvement association. House Article 12, Section 23, Senate Article 13, Section 14 are the same, which require a petition from impacted business owners in order to establish a tourism improvement district. House Article 12, Section 24, and Senate Article 13, Section 15 are the same and provide veto powers to business owners within a tourism improvement district. House Article 12, Section 25, and Senate Article 13, Section 16 are the same and provide procedures for the disestablishment of a tourism improvement district. House Article 12, Section 26, and Senate Article 13, Section 17 are the same and prohibit a county from establishing a tourism improvement district in an area where a city or town has established a tourism improvement district and vice versa. House Article 12, Section 27 is a House-only provision which would amend the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency's Workforce and Affordable Homeownership Development Program to authorize the award of loans. Currently, that program only authorizes the award of grants. It would also establish a fund to which loan repayments under the program would be deposited and would appropriate to that fund from the general fund monies from the general fund derived from the proceeds of the mortgage registry and deed taxes from 2024 through 2034. In fiscal years 2024 and 2025, the amount appropriated would be $27,500,000. And in fiscal years 2026 to 2034, the amounts appropriated would be $7,500,000 a year.
Madam Chair, there's no strictly comparable provision on the Senate side, except that only to note for the information of the committee that there is a provision relating to this program moving in the Senate's omnibus housing proposal.
House Article 12, Section 28 establishes a new state aid to tribal nations and would annually appropriate $75 million to that program. There is no comparable provision in the Senate tax bill. House Article 12, Section 29, and Senate Article 13, Section 29 would modify St. Paul's capital improvement and program to authorize the issuance of bonds from the program through 2035 and would increase the amount of principal of those bonds, which could be issued from $20 million to $30 million. Those provisions are the same with the exception of some formatting differences in the effective dates. House Article 12, Section 30 would require the Department of Revenue to submit a report to the legislature on free filing options for the individual income tax. House Article 12, Section 31 would exempt certain general obligation bonds issued by the City of Virginia to finance construction of a public safety building from the City of Virginia's net debt limit. As Mr. Sylvia had noted in our walkthrough of the public finance article, that language is carried in Senate Article 11, Section 17, with differences in the effective date. House Article 12, Section 32 would extend the redemption period to 3 years for properties that are or were formerly in targeted communities within Ramsey County, effective for taxes that became due in this year or later. House Article 12, Section 13 appropriates $300,000 to the City of Northfield for infrastructure costs related to a cooperatively owned manufactured home park. House Article 12, Section 34 appropriates $30 million in fiscal year 2024 to the City of St. Paul for street improvement costs. House Article 12, Section 35 provides a one-time appropriation in fiscal year 2024 of $250,000 to the Commissioner of Revenue for grants to the City of Spring Grove for fire remediation costs. This is similar to a Senate provision in Article 4, Section 27, with technical differences between those sections. House Article 12, Section 36, appropriates $100,000 in fiscal year 2024 to Minnesota Management and Budget to develop a taxpayer receipt and provides a base appropriation of $47,000 each year in fiscal year 2025 and beyond. House Article 12, Section 37 repeals a requirement that hospitals annually provide the Commissioner of Revenue with a copy of any lease agreement with a city or county. And that concludes the miscellaneous article.
Rest of these articles are from the department. I wonder if you could just give us a summary of them. Anything else that's notable?
Madam Chair, Article 13 in the House and Article 14 in the Senate are the department's policy and technical article relating to income and corporate franchise taxes. In general, there are some sections that that are carried in earlier articles if that particular provision had been modified in a substantive policy proposal by either side. But other than those modifications, to my knowledge, the articles are exactly as presented by the department in their bill. And Madam Chair, the last article in each of the House and Senate is a grants management article. Article 17 in the House, Article 18 in the Senate, both proposals would provide a process for financial review of of grant recipients. They, I think, are aiming to provide the same level of oversight and accountability. The Senate language also makes for-profit businesses receiving a grant or subsidy subject to the process. The Senate has some additional language relating to legislatively named grantees and proposes some additional oversight for grantees that had not previously received grants of this nature, and also proposes to make sub-grantees subject to certain review and oversight. And that would be a very high-level summary of the grants management articles.
Thank you. Anything else?
No, Madam Chair.
Then we're going to take a 5-minute recess. this bill and the things that we want for Minnesotans and Minnesota families, but the worldwide reporting provision no longer has our support. We do support other means, including the governor's recommendation and his original bill on capital gains. We're also looking at the tax that we can impose on guilty from that foreign income from 2017, and willing to consider other revenue raisers that are appropriate, and we can start thinking about those over the weekend. And we have no further business, and we are adjourned.